Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is someone you want to hear every single word she says, because we've been communicating back and forth and I wanted to bring her on the show, and she was kind enough finally to make time. She's a former Amazonian, and for 10 years, she was doing the buying for the beauty category. And in fact, we didn't know, but our paths apparently crossed without knowing, because I was a seller in beauty category and she was a buyer in beauty category. So we kind of caught up and discussed the old days. So she's been around for a long time. And today she's the co-founder and president of PackView, which is voted number one Amazon advertising platform. And when she's not working, she likes to travel between conferences all over the place, trip with kids, and also she's another foodie. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Melissa Burdick. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. You know, you and I can talk about the old days forever, right?
Yeah.
And especially in the Amazon universe, time is like every year is worth like 3 years at least. So there's so much to talk about. So everybody listening to the show, this is where you're going to hear straight, as they say, from the horse's mouth. So I want Melissa to tell us all the insider stuff where we can learn about not only Amazon's mindset, but some things about the hacks. Everybody calls the hacks, but all white hat stuff. But as you know, so much new stuff comes out all the time. And how do we stay on top of it? How do we get to know? Because the earlier you know, the faster you can act on it, and the faster you can act, the better, blah, blah. So we're going to learn all about that. And then also something Melissa mentioned that we're going to cover, it's the importance of speed in innovation. So if you come up with an idea today, don't sit on it, because the speed of going to market with it effects in many ways, and then Amazon's take on it is something. And then finally, Melissa is going to share with us some tips on how to go about finding the right platform to integrate with, to work with, and especially from small business standpoint, which apparently is a kind of an evolving concept. So with that kind of setup, you don't want to miss a single minute, because you're going to learn a lot from it. So with that, Melissa, let's dive right in. So we can talk, of course, hours. So let's pack as much as possible. So let's start with figuring out the hack. So tell us about how Amazon goes about releasing these new things. Give us a little bit of the backstory of something new coming out, and then how it gets promoted, and where do we get to find out?
And I would say that this has really taken a big change through the years. So, you know, something when we were first starting out, it was a very different world than it is today. When we were first starting out, it was literally more community driven. It was, you know, oh, something new has happened, let me go try it out and like kind of talk to other friends and communities about what's happening. Yeah. Through time, Amazon has become a lot more mature. And they've launched an API program. That's really how I got started at PackView, was by adopting Amazon's API. And we work with, so on the tool side, and agencies also work this way, tool providers work this way, but we have a very close relationship with Amazon. Before it was kind of Amazon puts it out, you figure it out. Now there's a lot more close relationships working with Amazon product managers, working with the teams, so that we can get very early insights into what they're building. And an example is, you know, one, we have to know what they're building because we adopt it and then build on top of it. So we don't have a very much longer lead time to understand what's coming out. We're not going to be able to quickly adopt it and be able to bring it to market. So one is kind of this acknowledgement and understanding that Amazon has a partner ecosystem and they want their partners to be successful. And that's both agencies and tool providers like us. And so an example would be the one of the latest launches Amazon did, which is their image AI generator. They launched this. They talked about it at Amazon Unbox conference last month. We'd actually known about it for a while. So they come to us, and I think we were their exclusive, if not their first, partner to be able to take this to market and integrate it into our tool suite. But they came to us, they told us about it, we adopted the feature so that when they announce it unboxed, we can actually also have it available for our customers. And so that's kind of the new way that Amazon's working with partners, and that's how we're able to kind of get the information first, integrate into our tool suite and bring it to market, because the faster we can do that, the more our customers and other people can adopt it and start leveraging it.
So does that mean that an average seller would have to work with a partner in order to find out what's coming?
Absolutely not. So, I think there's a number of different ways. So one is if you're, and sellers are working with all different types of tools and people. So let's just kind of break it down. So one is the community aspect. So one of our tool suite, our sister company is Helium 10. That really addresses the SMB side of the house. And they have Facebook groups, communities. That's where sellers don't have to have a tool. They can just get information. Do you know about this? And they can immediately get fast information about new features, new launches, following people in the community. So Bradley is our biggest face at Helium 10. If you follow him, he'll tell you about all the tips. There's other people in the community too. So like Destiny Vachon, a better AMS, she's amazing. She always, one of her tips and tricks, and this is one for everyone, literally every morning she wakes up, she drinks her coffee, she opens up the ad console and she looks at what's new. And so I say like she is by far, and then she'll post about it on LinkedIn. So either that's something that you can do as a seller. All you have to do is literally wake up, look at what's new in Seller Central or what's new in the ad console and see, oh, that's a new thing. Post on one of these communities. Have you tried this? What's this new coupon? Who's using it? Look in the Facebook groups, look on LinkedIn, follow the right people to be able to understand what's happening. Another new person on the scene relatively is Jeff Cohen. I don't know if people know about him, but he's kind of Amazon's evangelist and he's got a new role where he literally will announce all the new things that are coming to market. And the, you know, all the product managers now kind of give him all this information so that he can then post it on LinkedIn in kind of like a newsletter format. And I will say like that has been kind of a game changer in terms of understanding like what's new, what's launching, what's out. It's not the before it comes out, it's the after, of course. But it's really helpful to understand here's all things that are happening and kind of cut through all the noise. Cause as you know, there's just so much happening. What's good, what's not good. And so being able to curate, you know, various people you can follow who are thought leaders in the space, who are the practitioners, who are using the tools every day, like Destiny, like Bradley, so that you can follow them and just start reading their content, seeing what they're putting out there, looking at the quick snackable video content that they're posting and understand like, is that for me? So I think the first thing is just to follow the right people in the ecosystem that are using the tools themselves, using the platforms so that you can understand what's working, what's not working, join the Facebook groups, look at the LinkedIn community so that you can get and absorb this content so that you don't have to do it yourself. And then you can then produce, you know, understand like, oh, this really worked very well. I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah. Can you share with us, because there are so many groups, so many Facebook groups, so many different, you know, LinkedIn groups. Can you share with us some of your favorite ones? Which ones do you like?
In my unbiased opinion, I'm a little biased because Helium 10 is part of our family, but I will say I'm part of the Helium 10 Facebook groups. And that's where, you know, it's moderated by Bradley, by Carrie, by the practitioners who are in the tools every day. And part of Bradley's secret is he is a seller. And that's something that I really think you have to be. And that's what I was telling you earlier, like, I want to create my own brand, because unless you're actually a practitioner doing it, you're in the trenches, you really can't advise people on what to do. And so your hands on keyboard. So Bradley has his own brand. I think it's like a coffin or something, but he uses that to actually use the Helium 10 tools to actually understand, open up the console of Seller Central, you know, and be able to understand what's happening. And so is Carrie. That's kind of the whole evangelist aspect of Helium 10, is that you kind of have to be a seller to be able to have that role. So then you practice what you preach. You tell people, like, this actually works because I know it. It worked for my brand. And then they're also talking to lots of other sellers all the time, and sellers are pinging them because they know that they have a lifeline into Amazon. They're saying, what about this? What about that? So I personally have found a lot of value out of the Facebook groups that they run under Helium 10. On LinkedIn, I feel like, is a little bit more enterprise focused. Like, that's definitely where the enterprise market is, but it's also where you can learn a lot from the enterprise brands as a seller. And one of the hacks is that enterprise brands and brands in general have a lot more rules and regulation that sellers don't have. And that's been sent from the beginning of time. So that image generator that I just told you about, that launch, where basically, you know, what it does is you can, if you have an image like a candle and you want to say, hey, it's Thanksgiving time, create me a picture of a pumpkin spice candle on a Thanksgiving dinner table. The image generator will just generate that for you. Well, the big brands can't really use that because they have to go through legal approvals and all kinds of approvals. And that's actually, there, a lot of them are prohibited from using that kind of a tool. Well, sellers aren't. So the hack is that they can jump on this bandwagon, and maybe it's not perfect. Like, I've seen where there's toilet paper next to a toilet and they're the same size. Like, that's obviously never going to fly from an enterprise brand. Charmin will never approve that. But a seller, like, you know what, if someone clicks on that ad, great. Like, you know, as long as, you know, there's not a, they don't have to comp it because it didn't look like the picture.
Yeah, I mean, especially the picture is a good example. You know, holidays are around the corner as we record this, recording just 2 days before Thanksgiving, holidays are around the corner. So the speed at which you can make changes is key. So with big brands, good luck, right? It's going to go through God knows how many approvals. So this was very timely by Amazon to release, frankly. It not only cuts costs, but also it speeds up things.
And a lot of the things that Amazon's been releasing lately are really helping the long tail small sellers. So they're really trying to enable through templates, through creative, because these are inhibitors for them advertising, at least. Big brands are supported with agencies and they can go get creatives and things like that created. But the people who are more challenged to be able to take advantage of Amazon's advertising tools, at least, are the sellers, because they don't have creative. They don't have the team to be able to do it. So what Amazon's trying to do is enable them with more automation, with more tools that they can use, so that you don't have to buy other tools. And that's why, as a tool provider, we have to be even more innovative than Amazon, so we can bring value to the market. But Amazon really wants to help the sellers be successful and adopt and spend money on Amazon. Frankly, it's self-serving. But by being able to create the images, they're really trying to help the sellers be more successful. Yeah. To your point, like micro seasons, there's evidence that if you have a candle next to a Christmas tree that's a fir tree, it's going to sell better than if it's, you know, not next to a Christmas tree. Like, there's just a sentiment. And so by them having, there's a reason why they're doing this creative generator thing and templates and being able to help sellers create video, because video content performs really well. So, you know, they're really trying to create the tools that sellers need to be successful. And the hack is that the big brands can't really adopt these things very quickly, because it's, you know, there's regulation, there's approvals, like we talked about. And so by being nimble, by being able to see, oh, there's a new feature I can adopt, I can quickly test it and see if it's working. Those are the new hacks that sellers have, you know, they had a leg up initially because they were able to do a lot of things. Now, you know, it seems like a lot of brands since COVID, the brands have all rushed into Amazon because, you know, stores shut down, e-commerce became so important. Yeah. Okay, now I'm gonna do it. And so Amazon became much more competitive, especially in the ads market, because all the brands were there trying to get top of search and kind of bidding keywords up. So now, like, the new hacks are, how can sellers adopt the latest templates and features that Amazon's coming out with that maybe big brands can't?
So, you know, talk about templates. This is something that, as I'm sure you know, is always a big deal, especially at the beginning, because coming up with the right template and then making changes, and then, God forbid, if you have to switch from one category to another and things like that. Is there a way to simplify that whole process. I mean, I've been doing this long enough, and I could never find it other than try and understand in each template and what that serves, what each column serves. Can you share with us some tips to make life easier a little bit working with templates?
I mean, that's where maybe, and this is where I have a very biased view. It's an unfair view because the whole reason that we created PackView was to automate things. That's the tool space. And so you don't have to use PackView. You don't have to use Helium 10. There's competitors. You can use any tool you want. But that's what you should be seeking from a tool provider is instead of you having to figure this out with templates, the tools are trying to automate that for you so that you don't have all that work on your side. That's the value add. And so like a good example that comes to mind for me is Amazon launched AMC, Amazon Marketing Cloud. Sellers probably aren't taking too much advantage of it yet, but when they launched it, the best way for me to explain it is it's like, and you know, it's all this metrics and data. Imagine an Excel spreadsheet with like 2000 columns worth of data. Great. What are you going to do with that? You just write SQL to be able to pull that down, right? So like, great that they launched that, but you have to have a data scientist to be able to do anything with that, to be able to massage it and understand insights and things like that. So what we did at PathView as an example is we built templates to be able to understand overlap analysis of when you use search and DSP, what happens. And so we actually created the reports so that you don't have to write SQL. You could just go to our template and or our tool and see the report that actually integrates all that data into it so that you're not doing the work. And that's kind of an analogy, if you will, to understand the tool space. It doesn't have to be AMC, it could be anything, but like, instead of having to use bulk sheets, instead of having to use these things, the tool providers should be the ones that are making that easier, adopting the API. Because if you don't have the API, you can't, you know, when you download an Excel spreadsheet and it changes one column and you don't, that's when it all messes up, right? So like having an API, that means that you don't deal with that issue. It's all in your machine and it all works so that if there's a change to a different column, that mess up doesn't happen to you. That's like the easiest way in like English I can explain that.
Well, I mean, what I'm hearing from you is don't try to deal with these individual moving parts. Instead, find the right tool that deals with it. So you just use the tool instead.
Those are the questions. When you're looking for tools, these are the questions to be asking. Like, hey, I'm having a lot of pain downloading these templates and uploading them. Is there anything that can help automate this for me? Like, that would be the question to ask the community. And they'd be like, oh, use this tool. So, you know, wherever you find pain, there's probably a tool that solves that for you. And there could be, you know, cheap and easy, and also bring with it a community where you can ask questions and say, how do I do this? So that's kind of the best
thing. Yeah. Talk about questions. Now, when I started my podcast originally, for about a year, we are now coming up to almost 2 years. And for about a year, I used to ask the same questions to every guest. And sometimes we would digress, but essentially I would try to get the opinion of different guests on specific subjects. And guess what my last question was?
What?
And I asked, and by the way, I had former Amazonians also on the show, and I asked them the same question. And the question was, if you could change one policy, one Amazon policy for third-party sellers, what would that be? And so now you being a former Amazonian and you knowing the landscape very well, what do you think and Amazon could do better today?
I think the age-old thing where it's the most challenging thing is when Amazon creates policies that, and it's, I can understand having worked there, you can't create a custom policy for everyone. And so when it hits like 90% of the use cases, you're going to have 10% outlier where it doesn't work. And the biggest pain point is when the outlier happens to you and it's like, someone, and this, when I was a buyer, it happened all the time. Someone is literally writing bad reviews on my item and they're like doing it on purpose, right? It's like my competitor, they're coming in, they're purposely doing these things to me. Amazon's policies will say, like, they can't say that person's good or not. You know, like there's ways to just be like, I'm an independent person. I'm going to come in. I'm going to start writing these terrible reviews on you, and I'm going to try to knock you out. Their outlier use case doesn't solve for that. Like, you know, they're trying to solve for the most use cases, but that's doesn't matter. It's that person that happened to where it's like, this was my whole livelihood, and you just knocked my item off the site for some reason that's not my fault. And that's where the policing, like Amazon needs to police, but at the same time, some of those policies are what prohibit people from being successful. And right. I don't solve for that because it's very hard to scale a platform with millions and billions of SKUs on it, right? ASIN. So sure. How do you do that? And I remember being a buyer, and this is like the funniest story, so I'll never forget it. This was early on in my early days. There was this beauty brand that launched, and she asked to have a meeting with me. And so I couldn't find a meeting room. Amazon was like super stacked. You couldn't find meeting space. And it's like, oh, we'll have it in the buying room. So in this room is a large room. There's like six other buyers. By the way, we call them vendor managers, not buyers, because Amazon, that, you know, it's different. And so they were all in the room with me, and we sat in the middle of this room with a circular table. And she just proceeded to yell at me the whole meeting because someone was doing this to her. They were her competitor. They were, according to her, putting terrible reviews on her product. Why can't I, as a buyer, pull down her? Why can't I fix this for her? Why can't I, you know, she has terrible reviews. She knows it's her competitor doing this to her. Why can't I fix this? And this was Amazon's policy. As a vendor manager, I had no power. This was like an Amazon policy for me to fix this problem for her. Literally, I could do nothing. And yeah. It was so hard for her to understand that. And she just, like, everyone in the office was like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? And that is a challenge. I don't have an answer to it, because how do you have one-off use cases at scale to be able to bring these items back for people? And it happens today too. Like, they've gotten a lot better. You know, but like sometimes, like, let's say someone does this to you on Thanksgiving Day, like, you're kind of screwed for the year, right? Yeah. So just how do you solve that?
You know, I tell you a story. I was, obviously, when it happened, it was upsetting, but then I was very pleased with how it turned out. So this is the before we started recording, I was telling you about a client that sold masks.
Yeah.
So I'm working with them, and COVID hits, and they sold masks, and they nothing to do with the kind of masks you need for COVID, but nevertheless, everybody wanted masks, right? So as you remember, immediately Amazon started regulating mask sellers. So these guys are legitimate mask manufacturers. They've been in business years before that. They've been on Amazon like 2-3 years before that. So they weren't just anybody who was looking to just corner the market with masks. So guess what? They got pulled. They got pulled because Amazon said, we need to approve all the mask sellers as well as listings. So we understand. You know, it's COVID, day one, day two, but now they are hurting big time. So I reached out to Dharmesh Mehta.
Yeah.
And I'd never messaged him before. He's not even on my LinkedIn. So I messaged him on LinkedIn. And I said, you don't know me, but this is my situation. I work with it. And I said, I was a seller on Amazon for almost 10 years. I know Amazon. I work with Amazon a long time. So I know what you guys are about. And I have a client. And I think that this is hurting not only Amazon shoppers, but also Amazon in the process. Because you really, especially at a time like this, you need sellers like this.
Mm-hmm.
So same day, Melissa, in the afternoon, I got a phone call on my cell phone. And this person said, my name is so-and-so. And he said, we looked into it and they're back in business. Listings have been reinstated and you're going to get some automated emails. Just respond to them, but you're good to go. So I said, can I have your name, your cell? And she said, sorry, no.
it's actually a really funny story because, you know, again, that doesn't scale, but like that's part of the hack. That's part of the trick of hacks, right? It's your network. And that's also why the former Amazonians, like when I left Amazon, I became a consultant for brands. I was helping them when I was at Amazon, and I helped them afterwards. And it's kind of like part of it is your network being able to get to the right people to help reinstate things. And that's part of the trick of hacks, right? And it's, can I get to the right person? They actually read the email, they recognize your name, they're going to do it. You know, like it just, but again, like that's a unique circumstance. And one of the things that values that you bring to the table, which is I did this thing and it worked. Like your customer must've been ecstatic. Like that was the thing that you could have done for them. Right. And that value that you brought to them was amazing.
It was like, God.
100%. And that's, again, that's where, when you're looking for tool providers or people to help you, it's like those things, like those stories are the things that, you know, again, it's hard as a platform, as an Amazon who's got billions of products, to be able to say like, and I appreciate the fact that they did that, because there are so many people putting on the market, bad masks that might not help people, right? So how can they prevent those things? You can understand from their perspective, but the fact that you were able to get that product back in to market, that is where the consultants can really help you. Like, and there's people that pop up in the ecosystem that can do these things for people. And that's where when you have this problem, having you on the cell phone at the ready, where it's like, oh, I'm going to apply for your services now because I have this problem, or I need this person retainer so that I can have, you know, this issue fixed for me.
Like in some cases, like insurance, right? So you keep paying for insurance, hoping that you never have to use it.
It's expertise. It's what I would put the bucket of. You need the right technology and you need the right expertise. And when these things happen to you, they have experts like you that in the industry, you create your own brands. You've got the technology platforms that are automating things. And so it's not like the Wild West days of when you and I were doing it, which, by the way, I think it was a lot easier to perform because there were way less people doing it. Right. And you like kind of figure out the hacks, and Amazon didn't have all these policies in process, but now they do. And so it's just a new way of being able to be successful and having the right ecosystem of tech and people to help you.
I have a question for my listeners. Are you experiencing cash flow challenges with your Amazon business? Well, silly question. Who is not, right? So let me introduce you to Viably, a unique solution tailored for Amazon sellers and e-commerce enterprises. By connecting your Seller Central or Shopify account, you can promptly access funding along with a variety of financial tools, all for a flat fee. It's as simple as that. And for my listeners, they are offering an extra $1,500 in funding for eligible applications. Start your quick and easy application today at runviably.com/legends. And that's runviably.com/legends. Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, who you are working with is, you know, it's never cheap, but you're paying for that situation where it may cost you a lot more not to deal with it the right way and in the fastest possible way. So I never forget back many years ago when The Apprentice show was like new and Donny Deutsch was one of the people, and then his agency was used as one of the judges, and he said something on in that episode where, you know, when you hire a creative agency, what you are hiring for is the brains, really, because it's the ideas that they can come up with, and that's really it could be a game changer. So I have a question for you, Melissa. I don't know if you can share with us any tips. So I know that Amazon has business development people in place where they like to bring in new brands onto the marketplace. And one thing that they are able to do is if they send you an invite to open the seller account, at that point, they get assigned to the account. So they become the account executive or whatever. So if anything happens, then you have somebody there that you can call on. But if they are not the ones sending the invite, but you already signed up yourself, one of them told me that then you are basically in a black hole. Nobody can take ownership of you. So first of all, is this still the case? And how does somebody, especially after they start building their operation to a level where they would like to have an account executive, is that kind of a relationship possible with Amazon these days?
That nuance, it's kind of like, you can't wait for someone to invite you to be on Amazon. You know, it's like, I'm a seller, I have a product, I'm going to go get on Amazon. You know, that seems like it's happenstance where it's like, oh, I actually get this person inviting me. Okay, I'll do it. I think that that's probably few and far between because most people like are on Amazon. How many, you know, like how often does that really happen? Is that like 2% of the time, 1% of the time when they actually don't have the selection? That seems like a very, very small bucket of people who have access to that kind of help. And the majority, 99% of sellers are in the bucket of I'm on the marketplace and I'm on my own to be able to figure things out. You know, that's kind of like the 1P, 3P, like when you have a vendor manager, which now at this point, I mean, that's very fully automated. I would expect that to be less because I think more is being offshored, more automation is coming. That's the whole point. Amazon's trying to scale their platform and having the white glove service is going to be few and far between. So I just wouldn't rely on that as like an average seller because that's going to be a small percentage of the population. I think it's way better to take destiny and control of your own hands by forming the community, by working with people like you, by working with, you know, looking at the Facebook groups. Like that to me is like the smallest nuance of I wouldn't wait for an invitation because, you know, they don't have that many people doing that. And I think more and more of those jobs are being offshored to automate things. Anyways, yeah.
You know what I used to do? To this day, I still have relationships with some of these individuals at Amazon whose jobs are to bring on new sellers. So whenever I have a new client who doesn't have an Amazon seller account, I would simply say, hey, I have somebody and can you arrange an invite for them? And they will arrange the invite. So it's, I mean, the seller would not be able to get to those people because I happen to have a relationship to arrange the invite. But
that's like go to you to get. That is not, I would say like that is such a happenstance thing that that's another value add that you can bring to the community, which is, hey, I'm going to find a consultant or an agency that can help me get this invitation because people don't even know to ask that question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I in fact, what happened was, this is actually a good segue, this next question to what I want to talk about next is, when I was talking to one of those Amazon guys, I asked him the same question. I said, look, I have some sellers who are already on Amazon, but they are doing well enough, and they'd like to have an account executive kind of relationship with someone. Is there any way I can connect? I said, at least I have one seller who really would benefit well from being connected to you. He said, how much business are they doing? I said, well, it's about $2 million a year. And he said, first of all, if they are already on Amazon, there's no way I can be connected. Second, he said, if they are over $1 million, they are already on their way. Amazon is not going to really, we have so many sellers that are less than that, much less than that. And that's where we would like to see the growth. And so that was the answer. So obviously it didn't go anywhere.
And just to like getting into the mindset of Amazon and why we have people doing this, the KPI of that group is they need more revenue onto the platform. So sellers who are already on the platform, they're already there. There's no KPI for these new business development people. Their whole point is getting new sellers onto the platform. So if you're already on the platform, why would they then support it? Because they already have the revenue, right? So there's that kind of mindset. My feeling is you want to, the things that you can control better are the actual products that you're selling and the best products you can have. Everything on Amazon I'll admit as a buyer, everything's a widget. You know, brands would come in and like do their big presentations of like, oh, this is the most innovative product bringing to market. At the end of the day, it's kind of, you know, is it light? Is it profitable? Does it ship well? Does it not leak? Does it, you know, like all the parameters And those are the inputs as a seller you can control is this a good product for online? Can I have the best keywords? Can I create, you know, the best listing? Like the input, the images, like the inputs you can control are those things. Having someone manage your business or having someone to talk to, that's where consultants come into play, where it's like, well, I need help. I'm going to go talk to them. But I think it's way more important to understand, like, what's the white space? What's the product I can create that is going to be a success? And I can control all the inputs of making it a success versus like things you can't control, which is Amazon may or may not pick me to, you know, be a support staff. Well, frankly, they don't need it. They can hire you. Why would they need it? They can have you.
As you know, Amazon often loses inventory or overcharges fees. With Aarti, you can now recover up to 30% of your lost revenue at a monthly flat rate of only $99 with no commission fees for unlimited reimbursements. You can increase your bottom line. Their automated Amazon compliant process ensures hassle-free refunds. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends and sign up today to get 1 month free and discover your recovery potential.
Yeah. So, you know, I had another Amazonian, former Amazonian, who is a technical guy. His name is Elvis. Forget his last name.
Not great guy.
He's based in also Seattle. And so Elvis said during our conversations, some things he said, one of the things that he said was, he said, this is used on Amazon all the time. Controllable input.
That's right.
Controllable input. So worry about the things you can control. So in your whole operation, what are the controllable inputs? So what you are saying is the controllable input for a seller is focus on your product, make sure that it's good, and then it gets good reviews and good pricing and everything else. And everything else, just go seek support somewhere else. It's not Amazon's job, right?
It's like you can't get hung up on things you can't control, like an invite to Seller Central, or, you know, like you've got to take destiny in your own. And even, I mean, if you're a seller, you already have the grit that you probably need to be able to do these things. And so the hack is figuring out who are the right people to connect me with the right person at Amazon. How do I keep going and finding these things out? That's more the curiosity mindset, the proactive mindset, joining the Facebook groups to say, I have this problem. Who can help me solve this? You know, you can rely on the community. Who's the right person for me to send a LinkedIn and, you know, message, things like that.
Well, I mean, this is when you and I first had our meeting to prep for this. I said to you why I called the show Amazon Legends, because that's the thing. So you just said, you know, you got into this, you figured it out, right? So that's what I call the legendary act, because it's not just, if you start any other business other than Amazon, it's not really this complex. It's the much easier ways to make a living, so to speak. But people who get into this, they get into it because they have they have what it takes to persevere and then figure out and do. So that's the mentality that I see with Amazon people. You know, don't stop complaining, just go figure it out and just focus on what you can control, and everything else, deal with it. So let's talk about that small business approach, because just before we started recording, you mentioned something about the shift in the industry and the Amazon, how Amazon is handling that. So let's talk about that a little bit, because it's very valuable for the small sellers, especially.
Yeah. So one of the things I was mentioning is, and so we are a tool provider for anyone from the SMB through Helium 10, our SMB brand, to the enterprise space through Packview, which is our kind of enterprise platform. And so we work very closely with Amazon. And one of the things that kind of has happened through time is initially there were a lot of tools and communities centered around the new seller, you know, just launching 0 to 1. And one of the things about sellers in that space is they kind of come in and they leave. And so it's like, oh, I'm going to launch a product. Oh, it didn't work out. I'm going to leave. And so from a tool provider standpoint, this is not just, I'm just saying in general, I'm not talking about my company, but for a SaaS company, a software company where they're getting recurring revenue, that's not the most amazing customer because they're leaving all the time. And so what's happened in the space is there's been a lot of M&A. As everyone knows, when we first started, there were 40 tools in the ecosystem. Everyone launched a tool. Then either they kind of flamed out or they got consolidated, they got bought up. There's a lot of acquisitions happening. And what happened is a lot of tools started focusing on more of the mid-market because those were stickier customers, recurring revenue every month coming back, they're staying. So that kind of cohort of new sellers were kind of, whereas they were serviced somewhat well with tools in the communities, they've kind of been a little bit neglected. And so that's why Amazon is launching, when they launch things, a lot of it is to attract that long tail seller. Actually, when I was at Amazon, I was in the ads business and we launched sponsored products. Like that was part of the launch that I was part of. And really when it launched, it was really meant to attract the small sellers, like the tail, because the enterprise brands, the big brands were already advertising on Amazon. They were supported with field salespeople. What was the gap were those long tail? Well, Amazon didn't really, think about the fact that everyone would want to bid on keywords, and especially the enterprise brands. But anyway, it's a different point. But I think there's this now kind of more gap with the small sellers that are just starting out, where Amazon's like, hey, we have to support these guys. Like that business development team that you're talking about, they're trying to get new revenue, new sellers on the ecosystem. Amazon really wants those people. And guess who else wants them? Walmart. Walmart's also coming after Marketplace too. They see the success of Amazon. Now Walmart wants it too. And so all the tools that they're launching, it's templates. One of the gaps is around creative. So, like when you're a small seller, you don't have a big team, you don't have assets. And so Amazon's trying to make that easy by creating templates for you to be able to create images, that image generator tool that they've launched, video templates so that you can easily create video fast. So they're really trying to cater towards that long tail sellers with their platform, where you don't have to use a tool. You don't have to buy into anything. The goal would be you can just use Amazon's platform and you're good. And so I think we're going to continue to see more innovations and more launches from Amazon trying to attract those sellers to their platform with automation, with tools that they can use to be successful.
So, this is exactly the case, because I give you another way that started. So I don't know if this had anything to do with the changing of the CEO at Amazon when Andy came in and took mm-hmm. over. Because as you know, Amazon generally is very secretive. They don't like to share too much information. So, and their API was fairly limited. But when Andy came in, they opened up their API tremendously, compared to what was available before. They made a lot more data available. So mm-hmm. that also triggered a whole bunch of new tools coming out. So, it's still happening. And there is still data that's not available through the API. But you know what's happening in the process? Because data happens to be my area, and I always work on it. And what I advocate for is data-driven decision-making. Mm-hmm. So good luck. Sellers, small sellers, don't understand it. Because everybody, in fact, just earlier today, I was on a podcast myself, and I said the same thing. I said, look, everybody is so hyped about, okay, what keyword is converting what, and what is your conversion rate? What's your click-through rate? What's your impression share? They are all consumed by all this. But these are tactical things. What is the overall direction of the company? And then can you narrow that down at KPI level and then tie it back to certain actions that you can take? Small mm-hmm. businesses don't know how to do this yet. And frankly, there is no platform that does this yet. There is mm-hmm. just data dumping platforms. And they just, as they say in sales business, vomit, vomit, vomit data. And in the meantime, you have an audience that does not really understand how to use data to make business decisions. This, to me, is a huge gap that mm-hmm. currently is not being addressed. So what do you think? What's your take on it? And do you know any players out there who can address this shortage?
Again, not to be self-serving, but this is my business, which is kind of the tech platform. In the direction that we are going is exactly what you're talking about. So with Helium 10, we've launched the Insights Dashboard. And the idea is that it's basically pulling in your data and basically providing recommendations on how you improve your business and then saying, do you want to do this? Okay, do it. You know, so like identifying, here's keywords that you're missing that you're not bidding on. Would you like to bid on them? Here's what's happening in your business and here's recommendations on how to fix it. And so that's the platforms that are moving from reporting. They're just to your point. Here's your conversion. Here's your clicks. So what? What do you do with that? How do I manage my business? So where the platforms are going, and I highly recommend taking a look at the late. And that's the other thing too, is that the tools are evolving so fast. So what you remember 3 months ago is different today.
Right.
So with Amazon, same with us, same with everyone. You have, and that's the unfortunate part. You kind of have to constantly assess what's happening because we're moving at this fast pace of like trying to continuously innovate. And the innovation today, and this is what you should expect from the tools that you're buying into, is not just reporting, but actually helping you understand, okay, what do I do? Give me recommendations. Tell me how I improve my return. How do I get more profitable? How do I fix my inventory situation? So we're moving from reporting to like insights and actually recommendations of what to do to improve your goals. And that is, that's the platform that we're all building.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I use Helium 10 all the time. I recommend Helium 10. And Helium 10 has gone through a lot of changes recently, right? So there's a lot happened from how, what information you can see. The information is there. What I was really getting at as far as data-driven decision-making is the Helium 10 is making that already on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
What I was talking about was, as a seller, as a business owner, they don't yet know. They're not, because, you know, your typical entrepreneur is just an idea person, someone who comes up with an idea and creates a product and makes deals and starts to bring in sales. They're not really educated in data analytics and things like that. But as yet, as a business owner, that's what they need to know. And and as yet, there is no focus on it yet. You know, big companies, yes, of course, this is a big deal. CEOs know. But I'm talking about bringing this kind of mentality to the small business community, especially in our case, Amazon sellers. What is data-driven decision-making mean, really, for me? What should I do? What, instead of just, you, by all means, use the tools, but let's understand before, you know, you do anything, understand also, because it's their business, right? That's what I was getting at.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back to the team, the people around you. When you build a business, maybe you're the ideas person, but you need that strategist, you need a data analytics person, you know, like whatever you're strong in, whatever your weakness is, that's who you need to hire for, you know, whether that's part of your company or whether that's, you know, a tool, a service, an agency or something. You're strong in this column, you need someone to help you in this other column. And that's where you should, you know, focus your, you outsource to. So like, I'm going to have this skill set, I need to outsource these other things. And that's maybe the data-driven decision-making. You know, if you don't have that yourself as an entrepreneur, because there's some people who have that and there's some people who don't. And if you don't, you can rely on outsourcing to do that.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, the point you made earlier about having a consultant or having an expert on your side that you can call on, because, it, you know, my experience in, you know, I wasn't born in this country, so I came to this country for good reasons to start a business and had a vision and everything. But, you know, not being from America originally, I always looked upon the American people as good business people, knew how to do business. But you know what? What I learned and found out is a lot of people are very good at, very innovative, coming up with ideas and creating and making deals. Oh my God, everybody loves a deal. I got a deal here, I got a deal there, everybody. But running their businesses, they seem to suck at it. Very few people know how to run a business. They don't understand balance sheet. They understand profit, but they don't understand cash flow, balance sheet, inventory. Forget it.
let alone data-driven decision making.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Right?
Yeah. So I mean, that's the biggest gap. So I want to spend the next couple of minutes before we bring it to an end about, since you are the expert at it, finding the right platform. So give us some tips on how to go about small ones and big ones. I know you mentioned about not just reporting part, but as far as what are some things, because another thing that businesses struggle with is, because there are small business platforms and also enterprise. But at the same time, you could also overspend money, right? So mm-hmm. tell us some tips that people can say, okay, this is my guiding principle when I'm looking for a platform.
So I think one of the first things is, where are you at in your life cycle? Are you a brand new seller just starting out? And those needs are very different than if you're that $2 million seller than if you're, you know, more mature. So like, where is your life cycle? I'm just starting out. I've never been on Amazon before. I need a platform that's very basic. That should be very inexpensive because it's, you know, usually it's a, you know, relative to your size. And I need a lot of education, community, and, you know, very basic tools. So like, that's like bare bones. I just need that. Okay, I'm a $2 million seller. I have a little bit of experience. I have some ad spending on Amazon. Great. I need a bid management platform that can automate more of my advertising spend. So if you're not spending anything, you don't need a bid management platform. You can just use Amazon. So like, these are some of the kind of decisioning. We say at PacView, like when you're ready to, you can graduate from like a Helium 10 Atomic platform, which is more automated, to a PacView. And where we have like this threshold, it's an imaginary threshold because it's not a rule, but when you're spending something around $200,000, $300,000 in advertising a year, that's when you could, you know, move over to more of the our enterprise platform. So it's more of the bells and whistles and things like that. So I think it's, one is, are you brand new, just starting? Two is, okay, are you advertising? Are you actively spending money? Are you leveraging more than just sponsored products? Are you using sponsored brand? Are you using DSP? You know, like, are you really leveraging the full suite of Amazon products? These are some questions to ask yourself to then understand, how much of a bells and whistles do I need versus like a bare bone basic platform? And then the other thing that's kind of happening in our ecosystem too is, whereas before it was, there were a lot of point solutions. So like, brands and sellers were using like 10 different tools, one for, you know, brand protection, one for this, one for that, ads, advertising. There's been a lot of consolidation, a lot of M&A, and a lot of partnerships. And so instead of having to have a platform and have 10 different touch points and 10 different people you pay, having platforms that offer more services in one, you don't have to use it, but just having the offering where it's like, oh, I can add brand protection, I can add revenue recovery, I can add things like this as I kind of grow. That's a better thing to have, because then you don't have, it's less touch points, less management, less people to have to manage. And one of the things I think is important too, that I like to think about, is see where the tools are today and think about the team that you're working with. Are they innovative? Are they bringing things to market quickly? Because it's almost the promise of the future, given how quickly things are happening. And I think that's one of our strengths. We've always been first to market. We've been having a very tight relationship with Amazon so that we can get these APIs, we can get betas, we can launch it to market quickly. And so looking for people who have that type of relationship where, you know, if there's a new feature or a new product that you want to use, it's going to be in that tool as soon as it launches. And so those are the important things to think about. It's not just what you have today, but it's what you are going to have tomorrow. To feel confident that they're going to be able to help you.
Okay, well, that's a good tip. Speed is important, because time is money, right? So when something mm-hmm. is available, somebody is taking advantage of it. Yeah, I mean, it's true. Integration is another one, right? So you mentioned having several different components of it, even if you're not using, is a good thing, because you don't have too many touch points. And ultimately, I think at some point, I mean, now we have APIs and things, but ultimately everything needs to be connected, right? So with your accounting, your inventory, and Amazon and Walmart, and it's a complex world. And when you are passing data from one to the other, it's best that it's automated, because the speed, the human errors, and and everything else. Well, great conversation, Melissa. This is I always love talking to Amazon people because you guys speak a different language with all the terminology and everything. But it's very easy to isolate the problem. Like I ask you a few things, and then I'm seeing immediately your wheels are turning. Okay, that the problem is over here. So it's always good. So let's now my favorite part of the show. This is where some of my guests call it the therapy session. So I get to know the guest, and then we kind of peel the layers of the onion, so to speak. So tell us about you. So I know you live in Seattle. So tell us, where did you grow up and how did you, I'm interested in your early life experiences, not necessarily your Amazon years, but yeah. How did you get to be there?
So I grew up in Texas, in Dallas. I went to a small kind of private school for girls. I went to University of Texas at Austin for college, and that was super fun. I never in my life thought I would move to Seattle, because Seattle and Dallas back in, this was like 2000 is when I moved to Seattle, or like night, they were like night and day, like that. I never thought I would live in a rainy city. But my now husband worked for Microsoft, and he asked that, move up to Seattle. If you hate it, we'll leave in a year. And here I am, like 20 years later, in the same city. But
so because of your husband.
Yep.
Were you working at the time also?
Yeah. So my first job out of school, I worked for Accenture. So I did the consulting thing, and it didn't really matter where I lived. So I lived in Texas. I lived in, Seattle. Didn't matter. I was just on the road all the time. And I think that, the consulting kind of business, you learn a ton. Like you're 20 something years old and you're consulting these people who are twice your age on what to do. It's kind of an interesting concept when you yourself really know nothing, but it's also that kind of early grit that you need. I remember having a project and I was sold as a resource that was an expert in something I'd never seen it in my life. And so I had to like become an expert in this software to help with merchandising. And my customer was actually Nordstrom. And I just remember I have to go tell these buyers how to create their floors and like how to merchandise their floors using the software when I'd never actually used the software. And so that's where you just have to like go figure it out. You go on your own time. You have to go figure out how to use the software to then train these people on it. And that's kind of the mentality I think that helped me at Amazon figure things out. Because at Amazon, when I got there, there were no tools. You had to go write SQL as a buyer. You had to create your own queries, pinging the database. So like all these buyers, we'd start our queries on the weekend to go analyze our business, and the system would get overloaded. So you'd spend like 24 hours trying to get these queries built. I mean, it was like really wild, wild west, but like, I think part of that and part of the sellers too, is just like figuring it out. Like when one door shuts, another door opens, and you have to kind of have that kind of mentality where it's like, I don't know how to do this. I'm going to have to go figure it out.
Did you always have that kind of mentality?
I think so. I mean, I never thought I would create my own company, PacU. Never in my wildest dreams, being a, UT, frankly, like most of the women that I know do not work. that kind of, like maybe some of them do.
Why did you feel you had to work? Why different?
I think I've just been wired to be an entrepreneur. Like that's why I love Amazon. Amazon was very entrepreneurial. I had my own P&L, my own category that I managed. It was almost like having my own company and my own business. When you're at Amazon, they give you a lot of freedom. They gave you a lot of freedom.
So when you started at UT, did you have that mindset that one day I'm going to have my own business?
No way. I worked at Accenture. I worked at like big companies. Like I never thought that would be what I would do. But then I worked at Amazon. Amazon's also, I mean, actually at the time Amazon wasn't that big of a company. It was 2005 when I started, and it actually was a pretty small company. But it combined two of my favorite things, which is shopping and beauty. So how can you say no to that?
Do you have brothers, sisters?
I have an older brother, and he's got a crazy kind of lifestyle. He works for the State Department and has lived in Tajikistan, Afghanistan.
So he's not an entrepreneur either.
He's a crazy international something.
Yes. So how about your folks? Any business people in the family?
Nope. My dad's a doctor, retired doctor, and my mom was a musician.
And what was your major in University of Texas?
It was business.
And why did you pick business?
I picked marketing. I mean, I thought that I, undergrad marketing, business major.
And why marketing?
I don't know.
You don't know? Come
I don't
on.
Know.
You must know. You must know why you got into.
I always wanted to like have a job and work when I graduated from school. And, you know.
And marketing was, you know, fairly popular.
Yeah.
How come your father didn't he want you to be a doctor also?
He did not. He actually wanted me not to be a doctor. He said, do really? Not be a doctor.
Like, yes. My father, you know, my whole parent, my everybody in my family, both mother's and father's side, all doctors. But my father didn't want me to be a doctor. My
yeah.
mother did, but my father. But your mother also, so you were not an artistic person if your mother was a musician.
I was not, I couldn't sing. I had to play the flute as a young kid, which I didn't love doing, and I was forced to do an instrument. My brother played the violin and I played the flute.
Did you have your relationship with your father and mother? Which one was closer?
Probably my mom, because my dad worked a lot.
Oh, so, okay, because I was thinking, if you were closer to your father and your father didn't want you to be a doctor and you didn't really have anything to do with being a musician, so maybe you went with the opposite of doctor, which is marketing. I was wrong.
No. Maybe because I like to tell people what to do. And then that's when being a consultant, you could tell people what to do.
Oh, so you knew you liked to tell people what to do.
Yeah. And I think my daughter has the same trait. She likes to tell me what to do.
That's entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That was your early, because I'm trying to figure out when was the early sign that you were going to be an entrepreneur? I mean, that's that to me, if you tell people what to do, that's it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Must be.
And that led you to marketing. Well, I'm glad it did, because of where you ended up.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been a wild ride. I really liked it. So.
Yeah. So the moral of the conversation is, if you like to tell people what to do, the chances are you're an entrepreneur.
There you go.
Well, it's a great conversation, Melissa. So tell us, how can people reach you? What's the best way to contact?
Find me on LinkedIn, Melissa Burdick. Connect with me. Would love to chat. That's the best place.
Yeah. And of course, PacView is always there for, and Helium 10. So this is a fairly recent development, right? For Helium 10 and PacView combining, joining forces. And Helium 10 is this small business solution, and PacView is more enterprise. And you said your threshold is about, if you're spending $200,000 plus.
Yeah, 250K a year.
Yeah. And that's when you are a good fit. Helium 10 is a tool I always recommend everybody, and I've been using it way back when Manny was promoting it, so
yeah.
They've done a good job, and they're doing great, evolving with the whole changes going on. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for being here. It was a great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Before you go, make sure to sign up with Aarti and claim your lost revenue. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends to register. You will get 1 month free and experience Aarti's features. Sign up now at www.getaarti.com/legends. Also, say goodbye to your cash flow problems and claim your extra $1,500 when you qualify for $25,000 or more in funding. Go to www.runviably.com/legends and start your application today.
Thank you. And this brings us to the end of another episode. And I'll see you on the next.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.